Good morning. I'd like to bring the meeting of the Budding Waterways Commission August 16th to order. And we don't have a flag, so we will pass on the Pledge of Allegiance. And with that, I'd like to allow our commissioners to introduce themselves, starting with Commissioner Harris.
Cecily Harris, and I'm from San Mateo County, a public member.
Frank Peralta from San Diego, California.
Randy Short, I'm the Marina member and chairman.
Doug Metz from San Diego County, Coronado City in particular.
Good morning, I'm David Livingston, member, and I am the sheriff of Contra Costa County, and I represent the law enforcement community on the commission.
Catherine Pettibone, I'm from Sacramento County, recreational boating.
I'm Lynn Sadler, Deputy Director of Boating and Waterways.
Catherine Tobias, Counsel to the Boating and Waterways Commission.
It's early, we're getting going, huh?
Yeah, sorry.
With that, I would like to mention that we are running a tight schedule today. I think it's four of us have to be in a meeting in Los Angeles at another commission meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. So we're going to try and get our agenda over with by noon today so that we can get on the road and make the next meeting. With that, the chairman's report, I'll, in an attempt to move things along, I will be brief. I have met with some boater groups that have brought up two boater safety issues that are different than we normally look at boater safety issues. One of those is sea lions, and as I'm told, the sea lion population has grown exponentially since 19, I want to say the mid-70s, and it's growing at something like 5% per year. And the concern that's been expressed to me is attacks on boaters. And we haven't seen a lot of that until recently. And I'm sure many of you saw the thing on YouTube with the 13-year-old girl that was taken into the water by a sea lion sitting on a dock in British Columbia and was taken into the water by a sea lion. I've seen photographs now of at least two different boaters that were attacked on the dock while they were walking to their boat. Sea lion, unbeknownst to them, came up behind them and came up on the dock and attacked them from behind with pretty severe injuries. And so in the interim, we had a teleconference with NOAA about the problem. That teleconference was put together by the Bay Planning Coalition. And at that meeting, the statistics show that while the sea lion population has been growing at 5%, a little over 5% per year, they've gone from 70,000 animals to over 300,000. The environmental community says that the environment is supposed to regulate the number of sea lions, and that they think that the environment will only sustain 300,000, although there hasn't been any survey since, I think, 2010 was the last survey where there was 300,000. And NOAA reported to me and others on the call that there is no method to deal with the situation if the population continues to grow. They have no mechanism and no ability to do anything about it. So it's merely a concern that's been expressed because the interaction between boaters and sea lions has become greater and greater. The second issue that came to my attention was relative to the Channel Islands National Park. Channel Islands National Park is a very popular boating destination off the coast of California, off the coast of Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. I guess actually it continues on down into Santa Barbara Island, which is off the coast of Los Angeles County. And the problem that is happening is that if you're on the most popular side, the most protected side of the island and boating, you have absolutely no radio reception whatsoever. You cannot get weather forecasts. I had one person tell me that they were on the backside of the island for several days, tried to come around the end of the island to head home, and was unaware that there was a gale warning up and that they couldn't cross the channel. There's no way, if there's an emergency, to contact anyone from the backside of the island. And there's also no cell service available. So there's really absolutely no way from the most popular side of the island to make any contact. And that was expressed to me as a boater safety issue. So with that, I'll move it on to open it for any other commissioner activity updates. Anyone? Commissioner Harris.
Yeah, I am a member of the Bay Area Water Trail Advisory Committee, and this past Friday we had our first strategic planning workshop planning session, and it's really exciting. This water trail, I think, is about 4 years old. We have about 36 sites so far, but in developing our strategic plan, we're looking out to 2050. So we're looking out to what, you know, sites we have, what education, what advocacy, as well as what will happen with sea level rise. You know, the San Francisco Bay could look like what it once looked like pre-conquest. You know, all of the areas that were filled could become open water again. And of course, Boating and Waterways is on the project management team, and we look forward to their participation on the Boating and Waterways. I was also at a conference called City Parks Alliance in St. Paul, Minnesota, a few weeks ago, and Minnesota is like California. They've got like 10,000 lakes, umpteen rivers, And they have 57 water trails, which is kind of interesting. But they had a program which I thought was incredible. It's called Paddle Share. I'm sure many of you know about bike share. You know, in cities, you can rent a bike for an hour. You just put your credit card in, and you bike around, and you drop it off somewhere else. Well, paddle share is working along those concepts. You know, imagine along a lake shore or along a river when you can online reserve your canoe or kayak. You get a password. You go to the locker, and you get your paddle vest, and you get your your paddle and other gear, get in the boat, paddle to wherever you want to go, and then check out. You know, return your boat to the rack, return your other gear to a locker, then hop on a bicycle and paddle back to your parking lot where you picked up the boat. Paddle share. I just think it's a wonderful idea, and I don't know if there's anywhere we can do this here in California, but it seemed to be really taking on. And it's in a national park in St. Paul. There were also incredible presentations about aquatic invasive species because they, like many other states, have problems with invasive species like the ones I have here, silver carp, and they do many of the lakes and rivers. You have to check in and get your boat looked at, just like we do, and you know they don't. A lot more of it's education. They have people on bicycles riding around, you know, hauling trailers with informational gear, you know, things like these silly hats. But I think it really makes a difference with the kids.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Peralta.
Good morning, everybody. Number one, I just want to let you know that the advertisement for Parks and Waterways is really big in San Diego, and you hear a lot of advertisement, not only on the radio, but at the beaches and at the bay and everything. I just want to relay that to you, that you guys are doing a fantastic job as far as advertising the boat safety, and it's really making a big deal in San Diego with the numbers being down and people drowning and everything. So keep up the good work, and thank you very much. In your
Commissioner Pettibon.
Just to piggyback off that, I've seen a tremendous amount of coverage, you know, the advertisements, the life jacket use in Sacramento County, and it's been terrific. And I think for the American River Waterways, it's making a huge difference. So kudos to the staff. Thanks.
Any other comments?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Yes.
Yes.
I want to echo what Commissioner Peralta has said, being from that area. It really is the best program ever. It's just pervasive, and that's what you want. It's really saturation. I want to report that I represented proudly the commission at the dedication and opening of Glorieta Bay's boat launch ramp. And here is a photograph and article in the Log newspaper. And attending were the city's port commissioner, Coronado, the chairman of the Port Authority in San Diego, a couple members of council, including the mayor pro tem at the ribbon cutting. It's interesting in terms of the funding. According to this article, it may not be correct. Funding for the boat launch ramp upgrade came from the city of Coronado, $150,000, Division of Boating and Waterways, $670,000, and the Port of San Diego, $400,000. And $70,000. That's my report.
Thank you, Commissioner Metz. With that, we'll move on to the Deputy Director's report.
Good morning. I'm Lynn Sadler, Deputy Director of Boating and Waterways. And so we have some what I consider to be very exciting news. I have a new administrative assistant that it will be responsible for putting together commission meetings, and that is Lupe Perez Samaniego, and we are thrilled to have her here. She comes to us from Corrections, and she is already providing that wonderful outsider's eye, asking, why do we do this way? And we all realize we don't know, but we're very open to another way. And so welcome, Lupe. Thank you very much. And we have another new staff person here who will be introduced a little bit later. So we are seeing some new faces and some new ideas coming into the commission, which is, of course, wonderful. And I would also echo what you were saying about the saturation. I will tell you that I personally have done the 5:30 a.m. Saturday and Sunday morning fishing talk shows. I'm not normally awake at that hour on Saturdays and Sundays, so it's been an experience. But we are definitely out there, and if you know of any programs, talk shows, where it would be appropriate for us to be part of that, let us know. Let us know what you listen to, because you're examples of who we need to reach. So please let us do that. On a slightly less cheerful note, this year has been really a tough one for cold, fast water. And we have, you'll be hearing a report on accidents and fatalities in a little bit. And we had an excellent record going with a steady drop in accidents and fatalities. And we're seeing a blip right now. We don't know, of course, how it will be through the entire year. But this cold, fast water is not only part of the reason for boating accidents, but we're seeing a number of swimming, playing around water accidents. It's a tough year. So we, that's one of the reasons that we are ramping up the advertising in an attempt to impress upon people that just because you could swim across a river 2 years ago when it was nice and warm and slow does not mean that you can do it now. And I would encourage you to adopt a phrase that we are finding resonates with people. When you talk about hypothermia, they're like, oh, yeah, you know about that, or I'm a good swimmer, or, you know, it's not, people just aren't buying it. But when you talk about cold water shock, that people stop and say, wait, now what's that? And they want to know, then you get a chance to talk to them about the fact that cold water makes you lose the strength in your limbs very quickly. And you can talk about how hitting cold water causes a gasp reflex. So if you're underwater, when you have that gasp reflex, that's usually not a good thing. And so as we talk about water safety and cold, fast water, to use the words cold water shock, we're finding gets people's attention, and we're able to get our message more thoroughly distributed. You're also going to hear about the California Boater Card. Obviously, that's one of the biggest things that we're working on right now. That rolls out at the beginning of this next year. We're working with, it requires us to work with IT, information technology, to get databases, to get the ability to work with course providers and automate the ability to deliver these cards, because, as you know, we have hundreds of thousands of boaters, and we will need the ability to respond to a very large volume fairly early on. So that is, we're actually borrowing staff from around the division to make sure that that rolls out on time and well. I will get to this a little bit in, well, this is a crossover with the legislative update. Under SB1, Boating and Waterways was given an additional $1 million for our abandoned watercraft abatement fund. And so what we are doing to get that money pushed out quickly is we are opening a new grant cycle, a supplemental grant cycle for folks, because even though we ask people to apply for what they need, a lot of people kind of self-regulate and say, well, I don't think they'll give us more than this, so we'll just ask for this amount, even though their need might be greater. So we're encouraging people to come back to us if there is a greater need somewhere else. We are also reaching out to agencies that have not used this resource to see if maybe they don't really understand it. Maybe there's a it's hard for them to fill out the application, or who knows what the reason is. But we're using this as an opportunity to reach out and see if there are folks that might want to take advantage of this that have not thus far. Another thing that we are considering is an emergency fund, and that would be a fund that we don't distribute out at the beginning of the year, but rather hold back in case there's a storm somewhere and there's a sudden large need. And then that fund could be used in any jurisdiction, and it would not have already been distributed out to another. Now, we will still have our funds assist, which allows neighboring counties and all to assist. So this would be in addition to the funds assist. That's a little more complicated to do because it's a local assistant grant. We'll have to, you know, create the program and all of that. But if think that that might be a good idea, or you might have other ideas, do please let us know. So that's the plan for now. In our law enforcement training, we've held 17 training courses thus far in 2017, and we've trained 235 officers statewide. We have 10 more courses to complete this year. Our new 2018 training course will be out in November, and we're excited that we will be adding our first, actually that's this year, our first advanced maritime officers course. That's going to be September 11th through the 15th. That is a 5-day, 40-hour post-approved certified course for experienced marine law enforcement officers having a specific designated authority under the penal code. And this course is designed to instruct the experienced maritime law enforcement officer or deputy in advanced skills required to operate vessels in anti-terrorism port security operations, and includes the study of maritime threats and smuggling indicators. Sadly, smuggling has it continues to grow, not only of drugs, but arms and people. And so I think this will be an important course to assist law enforcement in detecting when that's likely to be the case and intervening when it is. We also included in this course will be pursuit of vessels, high-risk boarding and searches, as well as live fire and unstable platform shootings. So this will be a very advanced course, and that is in September. And, of course, we work with the Maritime Law Enforcement Training Center, the Coast Guard, and Homeland Security to meet their standards and keep our post-certification for that. We're also doing a lot as part of the transformation project with the entire Department of Parks and Rec. And the two big ones right now are service-based budgeting. Sadly, in a crisis that we faced a few years ago, folks, we did not have the ability to say how much it costs to run a park. The way we budgeted didn't look at it that way. It looked at a district. And so when you had to make those fine, those surgical cuts, we didn't have that ability. And so we are, it's been easier for us. We are broken down into specific programs, but we are working with service-based budgeting now. And then there's an overlay called FISCAL, which the entire state is going to be operating under. It's a whole new financial system. And so we will, the expression is, be going live with that very soon. We're entering all the old information into that system so that we can then begin fresh. And I can say that some of the staff, not here, but has had 78 hours of training thus far on that program. So that is actually a big challenge for us to get all of staff trained so that we are prepared and ready to take advantage of that. We are expecting to issue non-motorized boat launching facility grant notice between now and the next commission member meeting in November. And the other big activity that is going on in our division is aquatic weed treatment, which is always ongoing. But we are in the process of working to receive new permission to do our program. We work with, it's a federal, it's called a biological opinion, and it is a federal process. We get our permission from the federal government, and we are not required to have public meetings for that, but we chose to. We want the public involved because we control for environmental reasons, economic reasons, and public health. And so we wanted all of the stakeholders that would care about that to have a say in how this goes. And it's actually been quite helpful. We've had a lot of good ideas, and people are participating. We will need to complete that so that we can begin our program next year. And there are many processes involved, like there's a CEQA and NEPA in the middle of it, and we have to get an Army Corps permission. So there's the pile of documents that are required to make this happen, if stacked on the floor, would be higher than this table. We have to use scientific studies, and in some cases we're having to go out and do scientific studies in order to meet the requirements of this process. So this is also very intense program that we're working on right now. And finally, just for a treatment update, as you know, the treatment season started on March 1st. It's going to continue till the 30th of November. And the high, cold, fast water has been very helpful to us. Hyacinths don't grow as quickly in that respect, so we can sometimes get ahead of it. And we've had some areas that we have dealt with mechanically. We did a mile and a half in, I think it was Snodgrass Slough, might have been 7 Mile Slough, but one of them right there by the Twin Cities Road. And we cleared out a mile and a half, and a week later, it was almost filled again. So that tells you why this is a control program and not an eradication program. On submersed aquatic vegetation, the underwater invasive species, we began the first week of March, and we've rolled that out in two phases, which is interesting to us because the first just comprised approximately 3,000 acres delta wide, but the second phase, it was focused on a special project that was funded by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and provides herbicide funding to treat areas of the northern delta, and it's part of the Delta Smelt Resiliency Strategy. And that is a huge multi-agency project, and we are a part of that with that program. The final big project that we're working on, we have several special projects that are happening right now, is the boating needs assessment. And we have completed the non-motorized boating survey. We've completed the motorized boating survey. The non-motorized boating survey is live online, and we've been getting a lot of help there with people forwarding it to other folks. We're seeing a lot of activity with the clubs sending it out to their members, and so the hope is that by the time we are done, we will have a geographically adequate sample and a numerically adequate sample for that. And each of the phases, just to give you an example, the motorized boating survey was done in three phases. Phase one was 86,740 cards set out asking people to participate. The next phase had 86,000 cards, and the next phase had 38,000. So it's we've all been asked to participate in surveys and said no thank you and hung up the phone or failed to respond, and so it takes a bit of cajoling sometimes to get people to take part of that.
The law enforcement survey has been completed. There were 197 law enforcement entities that we targeted, and we've received 84 of those. We got viable responses. So our polling folks tell us that that is an adequate response for being statistically viable. And we are also working with Fish and Wildlife on a survey specifically for anglers. Many anglers do not consider themselves boaters. You ask them, "You're a boater?" "Nope." And then they'll say, "But I'm a fisherman." I said, "Well, how do you get down where?" And they go, "Oh, well, on my boat." And so we're doing a special survey of the anglers just to take into account that how they perceive themselves, and also to focus on fishing a little more, because we're getting some support from Fish and Wildlife for that. So those are the big projects that are going on in the division right now. And I'll, with your permission, Chairman Short, I'll move on to the legislative report. Mr. Parman, okay. So I spoke about Senate Bill 1 that gave us the additional $1 million for our AWAF program. There is also, and it's in your agenda packet, there's also a bill that would reorganize the Public Utilities Commission. And you may be wondering, what could that possibly have to do with us? But it turns out the Public Utilities Commission has a small program that certifies that for hire companies have liability insurance. So we license and regulate the drivers of the boats from those companies, but not the companies. The Public Utilities Commission did that. And the proposal was that that program would come to us. And at last count, there were 47 of those companies. It's a small program that would not be, in our estimation, difficult for us to absorb if the legislature decides to do that. Senator Hill's bill on alcohol and marijuana penalties, I believe you expressed a number of concerns last time. I believe those have been addressed, and so we don't need to go into that. And then we discussed Senator Galgiani's bill requiring us to collaborate with the California Conservation Corps, and we do that now, and if we get additional requirements, we'll be happy to work with the Corps. They are important partners. In fact, we had 5 Corps members who were under contract with us through the CC, and when we had 2 openings, some of them applied, and we actually hired them. So the program was working perfectly. It was serving as job training, and in this case, we have those 2 members with us now. There has been for a while an issue where our non-resident vessel registration fee is in conflict with federal law, and so there is a bill that is looking to resolve that. Did I word that correctly? Okay, thank you, Ramona. And then there is also interest in creating a program for quagga zebra mussel for water bodies that are already infested. We are watching that closely to determine what the funding source for that might be. And so that is being considered right now. And that concludes my report and the legislative report.
Chairman.
Commissioner Pettibone.
I just wanted to ask if the staff have had any awareness of SB 49, Senator De Leon.
And that's which one?
So this is in the Assembly. It is a bill that changes, well, it would say California specific environmental laws, clean air, water, endangered species, and then there's one more, have to be as stringent as federal law, all their guidance documents, interpretations, etc., at a specific date. It is in response to the political situation. It requires some very uncertain interpretation of what black backsliding is. So there is a question if a broad rule gets later tailored because of new science, is that backsliding? It also allows private lawsuits against the state as well as companies based on the future kind of interpretation of this. So I know when this bill got on my radar, one of the things that immediately came to mind is these very complicated multi-agency balancing of across the aquatic invasive species and how this bill might hamstring, because it allows stakeholders who might take one point of view on what something is less stringent to then file lawsuits. So
thank you. I will check into that. Yeah. It sounds like that could affect us a great deal, but more indirectly, as say we work with, we get a lot of permissions from other agencies. So it sounds like it would be those other agencies that are directly affected from the way you described it. I'm not familiar with this, so I will check into this.
The other thing in the Endangered Species Act is California has its own listing. This imports the federal listing, and it does not import other federal rules called the 4D rule that, you know, allow some take in certain areas. And it also doesn't have a provision for delisting. So there's definitely some complications that might be. And I know that many of the agencies are aware of this, but it's got a lot of people across a variety of industries worried.
Thank you. I will check into that.
Commissioner Metz.
Yes, I have a number of questions. First of all, thank you, Deputy Sadler, for your very comprehensive report. The first deals with the absence of any minutes of the last meeting on our agenda. How is the best way for the public and for commissioners and those interested in the work of the commission to find out what happened at the last meeting? Certainly the job description of any board member, be it public or private, is to review the minutes, to come prepared with some institutional recall of what we did or didn't do at the last meeting. So what is the situation, and are there ways that we can remedy that by preparing a one-page dot-pointed, bullet-pointed sort of summary of things that we decided or proposed or recommended at our previous meeting?
Thank you. Yes, we could do that. It has been determined that because these are fully televised and they are indexed. So if you wanted to see a particular item, you can go straight to that on the video, that there would not be a transcript or separate minutes prepared. Now, we could do that if you would like. But that's how we do that. So you would go to our website, and you would click on the commission section, and then click on the meeting section, and you would be able to actually watch the entire meeting if you wanted to, or you could skip through, for example, my report and go directly to the actions that were taken. And that is, that way there's no interpretation at all except your own. Anytime you do minutes, it's a somewhat of an interpretation. And the theory is that by looking at the video, you are seeing exactly what happened and drawing your own conclusions. But if you would like us to bullet point what happened, maybe carrying the vote, or I mean, listing the vote and what it was, we are certainly able to.
Or suggestions for agenda items that commissioners have.
Sure.
I would say any aide memoir that you, as deputy director, would keep.
Sure.
In terms of your responsibilities vis-a-vis the commission.
Absolutely.
I think would be good.
Okay.
Actually, all the commissions have dropped the minutes. I think exactly for the reasons that Deputy Director Sadler said, is that you don't have interpretation. It's also saved us a person who has to basically reconstruct that, which is a pretty laborious duty after the meetings. So it's actually, and I think I'll just give an example, the OHV Commission had a commissioner who missed the meeting leading up to the adoption of the Carnegie General Plan, which was somewhat controversial. And, you know, rather than reading a set of minutes, they were actually basically able to just go to that particular item on the agenda, watch it on TV. They were able to see, you know, what the people said without having it digested by somebody else. So I think the decision has pretty much been made across all the commissions to forego the minutes and to have everybody review the televised approach. So.
Well, I certainly support the objectives, and for the standpoint of the public, it's very, very good. But if you're a working commissioner, I can take a minute or two and scan the minutes of the last meeting, recalling what was said, not said, what I want to say, and I'm not going to sit and watch, you know, several hours many times of a meeting just to refresh my memory. That's why I made the suggestion that perhaps a sort of a précis of topics. One in particular I'll bring up right now. At our last meeting, we decided as a commission that we wanted a report, historic in nature, current in effect, of the flow of funds resulting from the excise, the gas tax that is reserved for boaters, which finances this commission, the Special Enterprise Fund. An historic view of that. So if I'd had the minutes in front of me, I would have said, you know, where is the agenda item for this to at least get a status report as to the progress of that particular study? So that's one. And in connection with that, I'd like to request, Mr. Chairman, that the next meeting of the commission have as an agenda item a report on the status of that particular request by the commission. The next question I have is, based on SB1, what is the anticipated amount of money that will be added to the Small Craft Harbors Revolving Fund?
$1 million.
I thought that was for the AWAC program.
It is, specifically.
Nothing else?
That's correct.
Really? That's interesting. I'm not following that bill, but I certainly that is a an interest. With respect to okay, my questions are answered. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Metz, Commissioner Harris.
Thank you. Director Sadler, thank you for your report. I do have a couple questions on it. I appreciate the update on the boating assessment, but I'm a bit disappointed. I'm a member of two sea kayaking clubs, and I have not been notified that the non-motorized survey is online. And as a commissioner, I should even know that it's online. So, you know, I'm sure you have very detailed lists of the motorized users and harbors and marinas, all of that. I did participate in the last survey. So how long will it be online for me to notify people who may want to participate?
And, I'll look that up for just for okay. a second. But the other thing, do understand, is that we have to have it balanced geographically. So we may have an abundance out of the Bay Area that's too heavily weighted, and now we're focusing on other parts of the state in an attempt to accurately reflect. I don't know that for sure, yeah. But I know that we have had to work specifically to make sure that we don't overrepresent any part of the state. Now, let me see if I can find for
well,
you the answer.
Well, that makes sense to have a geographic representation, but what if you find that significant numbers of your non-motorized boaters are in the major geographic metropolitan areas, you know, San Diego, L.A., San Francisco Bay. I bet that's where a lot of your non-motorized boaters are.
That is our assumption.
Right. Okay. My other question is, you mentioned earlier for these new funds from SB1 that you're going to reach out to existing grantees to notify them that there are supplementary funds available. And I'm kind of curious, and I think I've brought this up a couple times, to learn about release dates for, you know, many of your competitive grant opportunities, you need to be diligent and watch online. And I'm curious why Boating and Waterways doesn't do the webinars and the technical workshops as some of the other state agencies do. To bring new agencies in the fold, agencies who already apply kind of have the drill down. You know, they know when to watch for, you know, grant deadlines. They probably have a handle on some of the programs, you know, they like to compete for. But to get some of these new agencies in, you know, how are you finding them? Or agencies who've never applied?
I will have to get that information for you. I know that we have a number of outreach efforts that we've already made to kind of let people know. We're mailing notices. We're emailing notices. They aren't out yet because we're just now doing this. But if you have additional suggestions, we'd be interested in those. If we're not reaching people, we need to do that. We do use social media, and you're right, it is posted online. And I would say that we're probably, like any state agency, when we're incredibly oversubscribed, we're not as diligent about continuing to push wider. So you're right, we may need to do better on that.
Any other comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to public comments. And these are for public comments that for items that are not on the agenda. And any member of the public that would like to speak on any item not on the agenda. I don't have any speaker cards, so I'm going to assume that there are no public comments. All right. With that, we will move on to our advice and comment regarding the public grants. And with that, I think we're going to hear from Mr. LaMattina.
And if we can pause for just a moment while we deal with the technical issue that will allow you to see this more easily.
Yeah, otherwise, we probably should hold.
Yeah.
By the way, it was working and stopped mid. Okay. So if that helps.
We don't need to see her. Of course we think.
All right, thank you. We're going to come back into session and, again, move on to Mr. LaMartina's report. We got
1 second.
Yeah.
Is this live? Oh, okay.
All right. We may need to turn the lights down to adequate.
Yes.
Okay,
please.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson Short, fellow commissioners, Councillor Tobias, Deputy Director Sadler. My name is Leo LaMartina, and I will be here presenting the Noyo Harbor District's request for a $1,487,000 grant for the construction of Noyo Harbor's boat launching facility. With me today to represent Noyo Harbor District is Justin Piori, the Harbor Master, and also Jason Iceland, who is with SHN Engineers and Geologists, who are the firm that are working on the design of the project. We're here today to seek the Commission's advice and comment on the proposed project. Now, today we're in Fort Bragg, the site of the project location, and as I'm sure you're aware, Fort Bragg is on the west coast of California in the western portion of Mendocino County, adjacent to the Pacific Ocean, and we're about 180 miles northwest of Sacramento International Airport and roughly 135 miles south of Eureka. The Noyo Harbor boat launch facility is owned and operated by the Noyo Harbor District, and it's a very popular spot for not only fishing and motorized boating, but also non-motorized boating. The closest public boat launch facility is less than one mile north on the Noyo River, and that is California Fish and Wildlife's facility. They have a concessionaire's agreement with the Noyo Harbor District who operates and maintains the facility. That site was actually built in 1984 with capital outlay funds from back then, the Department of Boating and Waterways. It was built with $130,000. Also, the other closest facilities, aside from California Fish and Wildlife, is that Shelter Cove is 92 miles north and Point Arena is 45 miles south. As you can see on the slide, this is the project area on the Noyo River. As you can see in the upper left-hand corner, we have the launch ramp and the approach. We have South Harbor Drive that leads directly to the launch. And we also have the parking area here to the east with access on the south and the east sides. The Noyo Harbor District's office is right here. It's a small two-story building. And on the first floor, there are a men's and women's restrooms that are not ADA compliant. This slide shows the boat launch ramp and the boarding float. With current conditions, as a lot of us saw in our tour yesterday, is that the asphalt that the approach is made out of is in very rough shape, as so is the launch ramp. There are cracks, some holes, missing pieces of material. The launch ramp itself had grooves at one time, horizontal grooves, but those are nearly worn away. And And the other thing that I wanted to point out is that this facility has about 2,600 launches annually. Now, in the past couple of years, that's decreased a bit, 200 to 300, because of the weather conditions and also the canceled fishing seasons. As you know, salmon season was cut short this year. We also lost crab season because of the toxin that was present, they found in the crabs from the algae bloom. That was actually a strong neurotoxin. So that fishing season was canceled. There is, for launching here, there's a $10 launch fee and a $3 parking fee. That's the same. Those are the same fees that the district has for the launch north on the river, California Fish and Wildlife. Our next slide here, once again, shows the boat launch ramp approach. And as you can see, it's in very rough shape. One of the great features of this facility is that it does allow ocean access. Not only can you go up the Noyo River and down the Noyo River for a few miles, but you can also go right out to Noyo Bay and you get ocean access. The boarding float is obviously in very poor shape as well. The wood seems to be deteriorating a bit. The metal components are rusted. It's not the straightest boarding float either that we've seen. And it definitely needs to be replaced. Also, we have a picture here of the wood pilings that are currently there, and those are actually going to be reused. They're still in good enough shape to be reused, and it also helps keep our costs in line with this project. This slide is a photo of a small patch of eelgrass that is just on the edge of the project area. Eelgrass is a protected species, and it's important to the environment around it and other living things that that use it, the fish in the area. And it is going to be protected during construction. The patch is about 2 feet by 4 feet, and it's right, most of it is outside of the project area, but there's a small part that's inside the project area. While the project is being constructed, it has been put into the plan that they're going to use sheet pilings around that and come back a few feet to try and save that eelgrass. There's also going to be in the design is going to incorporate some type of visual notification when people are backing down the boat ramp to launch. The pilings and the eelgrass, as I say, are just to the side, and the riprap will come up to those close to that, and we want something there that is going to further protect that area. Pre-construction and post-construction surveys will be done, and if it is found that post-construction, if the eelgrass has been compromised or if any of it's been missing in any way, SHN and the Harbor District are going to complete an eelgrass mitigation plan that they've started. They created this plan and have a draft that has been reviewed by the California Coastal Commission. If they do find out that it has been compromised, they will finish developing the plan, go back to the commission for permitting, and then go into the mitigation efforts of actually replanting and monitoring those. It will be monitored every year for 5 years. The parking area is also very worn. The asphalt's very worn here. There are cracks, and it also lacks striping. This slide shows our concept. Well, it's not a concept. Actually, it's the design. We're at the 90% design stage right now. SHN is working on the final permitting with the Coastal Commission, and we should have the Coastal Commission's permit and the 100% plans and all of the other permits that they've received in our offices in September. After that, they plan to go to bid for construction. On this, if you noticed, in we're going to start in the lower left-hand corner in the southwest portion of the area, and you'll notice that this is South Harbor Drive that drives directly into the area, and across the street the boat launch begins immediately across the street. Well, in order to avoid any confusion for drivers who might think that the road continues on and we don't want them to end up in the river, these rumble strips will be placed south of the stop sign, as well as signage for right turn only that will notify drivers that they, unless they're launching a boat, they don't want to move forward. North of that is the approach with the boat launch ramp and a boarding float. Over to the east of that, we are going to be repaving the area and having an accessible pathway that will lead all the way to the accessible restroom and the accessible parking spaces. I'd like to chat for a sec about the boarding float. It has a removable abutment that's been designed so that the abutment can be detached. There are dowels here that keep it in place. This can be detached and the float can be removed in order to launch large ships. We had, as part of our tour yesterday, for the folks who are here and remember, we were at the Noyo Shipbuilding Yard, which is right just south of the parking area. And they were actually building a large boat there that they will use this ramp in another 6 months to a year when this is finished to actually launch that boat. So the boarding float needs to be removed. We need to be able to have that feature. Also, I would like to discuss the parking lot. The parking lot has been designed for an optimum amount of 61 spaces. That's 42 vehicle trailer spaces, 19 single vehicle spaces, and four of those spaces are ADA spaces, which you can see right next to the ADA restroom. As per the California Coastal Commission, this parking area needs to have permeable paving material. There needs to be permeable material to allow the water to go through that material, through the aggregate, and filter down, as opposed to running off into the river or into any other sensitive areas. This has caused cost of this project to increase by nearly $400,000, and that's compared with rebuilding the parking lot with permeable asphalt to just doing a slurry seal to rehab the parking lot. So due to this this requirement, the costs have increased. What we've decided to do, and SHN and the district have been leading the charge on this, is that this was bid as we've costed it out so that it's in pieces, different alternatives. If the parking area becomes cost prohibitive, if it becomes too expensive and it's outside of our budget, then we have the ability to reduce the size of the parking area. Now, according to Boating and Waterways design guidelines, with a one-lane launch ramp, we should have 20 to 30 spaces. So with that in mind and with boater demand, regardless if this stays at the optimum 61 spaces or we have to reduce it to the 20 or 30, we are going to provide something that meets boater demand. That's our goal here. But we're going to have to work within a budget. So we're going to see how those bids come back this fall. Also, there will be signage included for this, for the parking lot, letting users know and folks in the surrounding area that this has been funded for recreational boaters only. You'd probably notice yesterday in the on the tour that it's a large parking lot that even goes beyond our improvements here, and there were some commercial fishing vehicles and others parked kind of right off to the side of this. But the harbor has assured us that they will talk with their neighbors and make sure that all of those folks are parked off of this actual site that's being funded through the Harbors and Watercraft Fund. There's plenty of room for them to park along the side of it and south. As I had also said, going back real quick to the boat ramp, is that is going to be a concrete V-group boat ramp. And just to give you some other details, it's going to be a flush restroom, and we do have the a concrete project credit sign, and as I already stated, other directional signage. We've already discussed the abutment section, and now I'd like to talk about the project cost estimate. And previously in FY 2012-13, Noyo Harbor District received a planning grant for $300,000 for the design and an engineer's estimate of cost for this and permitting for this facility. We're at the tail end of it, as I said. We are going to receive the 100% plans and all the permits in September, so they've been moving along really great on this. Project's going really well. The proposed construction grant is $1,487,000 to give us a total project cost estimate of $1,787,000. As you notice on the our cost estimate, we have the parking area at $545,000, and we also have the eelgrass mitigation plan for $107,500. That we budgeted the eelgrass mitigation plan in there in case it's needed. It may not be needed. If we can save that eelgrass and there aren't any problems, then we won't have to spend that money on further developing the plan, going back for permitting, and then the actual mitigation itself. But we wanted to make sure that we budgeted for that. As I said, we're expecting the plans in September, and construction is expected to start landside on April 15th and then in water on July 15th. They're not allowed to go in water until July 15th, but they can start the project landside before that. Also, one of the most important parts that I feel of my job here at Boating and Waterways is that we're here to serve the boaters and taxpayers. And we look at the impact and the benefit-cost ratio of these facilities as we develop them. And with our figures show that 9,900 boaters will be served annually with this facility after we finish completion. That is 198,000 boaters over the 20-year life of this. Those are a lot of people being served. I think that, to me, in my opinion, that sounds great. We also take a look at the present value of benefits versus the project costs. And when we work that math out and look at the ratio, that has to come out to a 1 or higher for us to believe that it's economically feasible and it works for the state and the boaters and everybody involved. This project came out at 1.39, even with some of the costs that we've run into. So it's looking great. Recommendation, advice, and comment on this proposed $1,487,000 Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund construction grant to the Noyo Harbor District for the Noyo Harbor boat launching facility improvements described in this August 16, 2017 feasibility report.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, I have a couple of questions. we had a conversation yesterday during the tour about the permeable surface, and I understand you're going to look at other alternatives as well, which that's encouraging to me because I would hate to see us compromise and reduce the size of the project as a result of this. especially given that I had some subsequent conversations with people relative to this product that we're talking about. And what I'm told is that this product requires constant maintenance or it does not work. And that there is no ability of any agency to require that maintenance. So I certainly would encourage that we look at other alternatives, because I would hate to see us spend all that money on something that just flat doesn't work. And I'm being told it just, unless you intensely maintain it, it just flat doesn't work. My second question is relative to the surface itself. And have you taken a look at the what kind of weight the launch ramp can withstand, and whether, I mean, that's a big boat that's going to be launched there. That's typically not within our specs.
Yeah, I will, Chairperson Short, I'm going to introduce Jason, turn this over to Jason Eisland, the engineer working on the project, and he can answer both those questions.
Sure. Thanks, Leah. So we did speak yesterday about permeable pavement, and we see permeable pavement getting used a lot because it's definitely the most common way of dealing with the current requirements to deal with stormwater and infiltrate. I personally prefer stormwater basins if we can do that, stormwater gardens and vegetated swales. In our first go, that wasn't an immediate option for us, but we are going to look at that. I think that is a good option to explore. I think it could ultimately save us money and long-term maintenance costs. The other thing I wanted to reiterate in terms of the cost that Leo's talking about with the permeable pavement, certainly some of those costs, those big costs we're talking about, are surface prep and other improvements other than the actual permeable pavement surface. So we are improving the whole section. And if the permeable pavement were to fail short of its intended lifespan, we've still done a lot to improve the parking lot for a future resurfacing. So hopefully that...
Can you address the weight issue as well?
Yeah, certainly. So as far as the weight, our waterside engineers were made aware that we're launching large boats there. I can definitely chase it out and make sure that the weight launch of the those large craft are fine for this launch ramp. I know all the abutments and the asphalt leading up to it is more than enough to handle that weight, but we'll chase that out.
Thank you.
You bet.
Any other comments, Commissioner Harris?
Sorry.
I always have questions. Now, I really like this project, but I have a couple questions in addition to the ones that you all helpfully answered yesterday. So at this site, you're proposing a one-unit, one-vault toilet.
Correct.
Now, is there a facility down near the Fish and Wildlife launch? Is there a bathroom there?
There's an outhouse.
There's an outhouse.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which some of us probably had a chance to use yesterday.
Right. So I guess my question is, at what point, you're saying 9,900 users a year, at what point do you have two stalls? What generates the
right.
Another stall? Because looking at that area, you also have the folks in the boat building area. You also have other businesses and users. I bet a lot of people would just use that restroom beyond the people launching their boats.
Sure. And
just to guess.
Absolutely. I mean, the restrooms are used heavily.
Mm-hmm.
We have other nearby restrooms. There's one at the Harbor Master's office, which is a couple hundred feet away from where we were. And then there are three restrooms. Or is it two? There are two at the Mooring Basin, which are also walking distance. The key with this one is that it's adjacent to ADA accessible parking, and there's a clear ADA path of travel from the parking to the bathroom to the ramp.
Right. Yeah. But again, many people will use the ADA restrooms just because they're there and new and clean and all of that good stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you. My other question is, it appears that there will be a $10 launch fee and a $3 parking fee. And maybe this is a question for you. Do you have annual launch fees? Because sometimes that helps users. You know, if you come more than 10, 12 yeah. times a year, it could be beneficial just to have your hang tag pass or
we
something.
We do. It's $140 a year okay. we charge. And for handicapped people, mm-hmm. you know, it's $100.
Nice. Okay, good.
And we sell a few of those, too.
Do you have any, like, special fee for veterans? I'm sorry. Do you have a special fee for veterans?
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. And what is that?
$7.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Mintz.
Yes, a couple questions. First of Mr. Lamartino, excellent presentation. You'd mentioned that there was a total cost of $1.7 million?
Yes, that's what we estimate right now, Commissioner Metz. The construction grant that we're talking about here today is $1,487,000.
Yes.
Now, when you add the previous $300,000 that they were granted in 2012 and 13, that was the planning grant. So when you add both those together, we've got a total project cost of over $1.7 million.
But clearly today, the duty of the commission is to offer comments with respect to the $1.486 million.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes.
The next question, I think our guests can comment upon. We've been very sensitive to the economic impact of capital outlays like this for launch facilities and related facilities on the community. What do you see as the economic impact of a new, better, more accessible boat launch ramp?
I'm Justin Pure. I'm the harbor master, just so you know. I think it'll bring a lot, a lot more boating. People that, you know, can use it and come down and see the nice facility. They drive down and they see a nice, cleaner area to launch their boats. I think it's going to increase people coming down to the harbor, with just the look of it and the feel of it not being so old, and I think people feel like coming down there, and the launch will be a lot easier access. The way it's being right now, it's really unless you're launching in a high tide, it can be kind of dangerous with their trailers, and so I think it's going to be great all around.
Well, thank you very much.
Can I speak to that as well?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm Jason Iceland. I'm the design engineer, but I'm actually going to speak more as I do a lot of youth outreach with the rowing club. I know some of you went out with us. And so I think this launch ramp is very important because, as Justin was saying, this is the first thing you see when you drive down to the harbor. You have to drive up to the other boat launch. This boat launch is in the heart of the fishing community, which is what I think myself and most people are drawn to about our community and our harbor in particular, is being around all of that historic fishing activity. I think the non-motorized boaters would use this as a go-to because it puts them right in the heart of that fishing village and also gives them better access to the inner harbor and the outer harbor without having to paddle 2 miles from the upper ramp. And then finally, this ramp is actually the only ramp that's available that's part of the dredge channel. The upper ramp that I believe you toured yesterday is it's not part of the dredge channel. So large recreational craft, which are becoming increasingly important for the harbor district as commercial fishing gets more and more compromised, these larger craft, they can't launch at that upstream ramp during anything other than a very high tide. And so in mid-range and low tide ranges, this ramp will provide a place for large recreational craft to launch, which will be very helpful for the harbor district.
Yes, Jason, if I can add to that, Commissioner Metz, I'm sorry that Commissioner Medwainis is not here today. She's usually very in favor of the economic development side of our projects, and it is something where fishing has been compromised here. And the community, as we heard from some of the NOAAO Harbor board members yesterday, that they're looking for other ways. A lot of these folks are fishermen. fish, and they've had to leave their, I'm looking for fishermen, fisher people, I guess, but they've had to actually just dock their boats and look for other Absolutely. Means, construction, what have you, because fishing's not happening right now. So this is something that could give this area a really needed boost, an economic boost, and hopefully, I'm hoping that they develop more industry out of it, kayak industry, have guided tours, have more stops along the river, restaurants, and hopefully that'll come in time. But I think it's something that the community really needs right now.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. And roll call, please.
Commissioner Harris?
Yes.
How do you vote?
Yes.
Yes. Harris, yes. Commissioner Peralta?
Yes.
Peralta, yes. Commissioner Metz?
Yes.
Metz, yes. Commissioner Livingston?
Yes.
Livingston, yes. Commissioner Pettibone?
Yes.
Pettibone, yes. And Chairman Short?
Yes.
Short, yes. For a unanimous yes vote. So we will move. Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for the presentation yesterday.
Yes.
With that, we'll move on to Minersville BLF and Mr. Dukes.
Good morning, Chairman Short, Commissioners, Legal Counsel Tobias, and Deputy Director Sadler. My name is Joe Dukes with the DBW's Division of Boating, DBW's Boating Facilities Development and Financing Unit. I'm here to present the United States Forest Service's request for a $4,850,000 planning and construction grant for improvements to the Minersville boat launching facility. And here to represent the Forest Service is Scott Rogers, District Ranger. And we're here to seek the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed project. From here, we go to the map. Minersville Boat Launching Facility at Trinity Lake is located approximately 170 miles from Sacramento. There it is. And here's Sacramento. And it's also 50 miles northwest of Redding. Most commissioners have had the opportunity to see the facility in person during the February commission meeting at Trinity Lake. That was February 8th of 2017. This is an aerial view of the existing Minersville boat launching facility. The facility is approximately 40 years old. It is the only boat ramp available to access Trinity Lake during low water conditions. The facility consists of an entrance roadway and a two-lane asphalt boat ramp. The boat ramp was originally a road before the dam was constructed. And Minersville currently does not have a designated parking area. The proposed project includes an asphalt parking area to be constructed at the campground location here. The ramp's asphalt surface, as you can see, has deteriorated, making it difficult to launch, especially during low water conditions. The length of the ramp is also very long. The improved boat ramp would be two lanes with turnarounds for safety and maneuverability. And in fiscal year 15 and 16, the Forest Service received a ramp repair and modification grant that temporarily improved the access roadway and the access roadway until a permanent solution can be constructed. The entrance roadway, as you can see, is narrow and it's difficult for larger vehicles with trailer boats to maneuver. The proposed project would widen the access roadway. The cable guided boarding floats here, it's small, it's dilapidated, and it's in need of replacement. Proposed project improvements include three new 8 foot wide by 20 foot long cable guided boarding floats that would be installed onto the new concrete boarding float landing of the ramp. As mentioned before, Miners Fork currently does not have a designated parking area. Boaters currently park along the gravel strips on both sides of the ramp. Some boaters would launch at Minersville and then would drive their vehicle trailers back to the campgrounds or the nearby marinas to park. The proposed project improvements include a new parking, asphalt parking area that would be constructed above the high water level of the lake at the campground location seen here. And this is the preliminary construction plan that includes, let me get the mouse, widening the entrance roadway, a new parking area, a restroom near the top of the ramp. Information kiosk will also be installed with a project credit sign. And the ramp, I will talk about on the next slide. This is the preliminary construction plan for the ramp. The improvements include removing the existing asphalt ramp and constructing a new concrete, it's a two-lane concrete V-groove ramp at a minimum of 2,000 feet long, which is the bulk of the construction expense. Up to 5 turnarounds would also be installed on the east side of the ramp, a 8-foot-wide concrete 20-foot landing on the west side of the ramp. Riprap would also be installed on both the sides and the toe of the ramp. And the proposed project would be fully funded through this DBW grant. The table here identifies how costs are split out. As you can see, the bulk of the project expense is going towards the ramp. And due to the recent year of heavy rainfall, construction may be delayed if the lake levels do not fall low enough to pour the ramp. And construction contracts may have to be tailored accordingly. And impacts. Over 21,000 boaters are expected to benefit from the improvements annually for this project, and over 424,000 boaters would benefit from the 20-year life of the grant. And with the benefit-cost ratio of 1.3, so this is a good project to move forward with. And DBW recommends the condition that the Forest Service, at its expense, must complete NEPA requirements by March 1, 2018, before any funds would be advanced. And at this time, we request the Commission's advice and comment for this proposed $4,850,000 Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund Planning and Construction Grant with conditions to the United States Forest Service for the improvements to the Minersville Boat Launching Facility. And I would look forward to working with the Forest Service on this wonderful project. Thank you.
Thank you. Quick question. Yeah. We all saw the site, or most of us saw the site a few months ago. What's the lake level look like today, comparatively speaking?
Yeah, I wasn't here earlier this year. My name is Scott Rogers. I'm the district ranger for the National Recreation Area on the Shasta Trinity National Forest. Sorry, thanks. I don't know how it looked in February, but right now it's still fairly high, my understanding, based on how it's looked in the past 5 years with the drought conditions, which is great news for the boaters, the recreationists, and difficult for construction planning purposes for the future. But it's still fairly high.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions from commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Livingston.
Ranger Rogers, it looks like the Department of Boating Waterways has granted over $5 million in grants over the last 20-plus years. This is a large amount, $4 million plus. Does the Forest Service have any, if you know, have any budget or plans to maintain these facilities going forward or to make improvements? In other words, are there alternative funding sources that perhaps the Forest Service itself would be setting aside for these kinds of projects?
So right now, all of our boat launches are run under a concessionaire program, and so they're run by Shasta Recreation Company via Granger Thigh grant or a permittee process. And so that process involves reinvestment of funds that company generates into our developed recreation sites, including boat launches and things. So that would probably go more towards restrooms in the future. I don't know. I can't speak specifically for the boat ramp itself. But in terms of parking lot features, picnic tables, restrooms, like I mentioned, that would be
most realistic in terms of in the future for investments from either our side or Shasta Recreation Company or whoever the future concessionaire may be.
Okay, thank you.
A quick question. How long are your typical concessionaire agreements?
Those permits are 10 years total length before we go out for prospectus again. There's a 5-year window trial period basically in the beginning that allows us to make sure that we want to continue for the final 5 years of the 10-year permit. We just renewed Shasta Recreation Company's permit a year ago, so they've got 4 more years left.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion. Commissioner Pettibone has moved. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Harris is seconded. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Pettibone, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Livingston?
Aye.
Livingston, aye. Commissioner Metz?
Yes.
Metz, yes. Commissioner Peralta?
Yes.
Peralta, yes. Commissioner Harris?
Yes.
Harris, yes. And Chairman Short?
Yes.
Short, yes. Unanimous, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, with that, we'll move on to division programs. We are going to cover that, but it'll be in a slightly different order, although the first one is remaining the first one.
Good morning, Chairman, Deputy Director, fellow commissioners. I wanted to introduce the next presenter. Her name is Lisa Fernandez. She is new to the Division of Boating and Waterways. My name is Karen Dill. I'm Chief of the Boating Facilities Development and Financing Unit. Lisa Fernandez comes to us from also State Parks Division of Off-Highway Vehicle. So she comes with a tremendous amount of grants experience from other state agencies as well as OHV, and we're pleased to have her. She's been a tremendous asset for the last 2 months that she's been here. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Short, fellow commissioners, legal counsel Tobias, and Deputy Director Sadler, and members of the public. Again, my name is Lisa Fernandez, and I am the new program lead for the Boating Infrastructure and Clean Vessel Act grant programs. I have been in my position with Division of Boating and Waterways since March of 2017, and I am here today to present to you an update on the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, also known as BIG. The purpose of the Boating Infrastructure Grant is to construct, renovate, or maintain visitor tie-up facilities for transient recreational boats 26 feet or more in length. Transient meaning boaters traveling to different locations, passing through, staying 15 days or less. BIG is a federally funded program and managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and funded from the Sport Fish Restoration Fund. And here at Division of Boating and Waterways, we're proud to be the designated state grant administrator for this program. The slideshow does show the Stockton Marina guest dock that was funded through a big grant, and this project was complete in 2009. The big program offers two different grant awards. Tier one is up to $200,000, and that is available for projects in California. Each tier one cannot exceed that $200,000, but we may award more than one Tier 1 grant as long as the total amount of awarded grants does not exceed that $200,000. Tier 1 is competitive within the state of California. Tier 2 proposals are ranked nationally. Up to $1.5 million may be awarded to a California project in the national competition. DBW does receive the California proposals, and we do screen for eligibility before we forward them on to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Grants must meet all eligibility requirements per the federal regulations, and each awarded grant must provide a minimum of 25% match. The big grant application cycle deadline for this year was August 1st to DBW, and we received 6 applications. which we are currently reviewing, and we will be submitting eligible applications to U.S. Fish and Wildlife no later than their deadline, which is September 11th, 2017. We did update our big web page this cycle, and we made it similar to our facility grants and loan web page. We also added an application instruction guide to help our applicants with the process. And we hope that the new updated information helped provide a greater understanding of the big program. Since 2000, California has been awarded over $16 million for 33 infrastructure projects with 21 public and private entities. California has been awarded 15 projects within Tier 1, and Tier 2, we had 18 projects. Boating infrastructure grant eligible activities included here are tie-ups, which may include slips, piers, mooring buoys, day-use docks, and gangways, and also amenities, which would include fuel stations like the one shown here on the slide, which is the Marina Del Rey Big Project, which was completed in 2010. Other amenities may include restrooms, showers, utilities, and laundry. Security, which might be lighting and communications. Safe harbor, which could be floating or fixed breakwaters, seawalls, and wave attenuators. Soft costs, which would include preliminary project costs. But to note, these costs will only be funded if the project is approved. And these would include conducting appraisals, administering environmental reviews, feasibility studies, preparing drawings, construction plans, and specifications. Big funding can also pay for a one-time dredging up to $200,000. The city of Avalon, located in Catalina Island, completed three big projects, and they were all located in Avalon Harbor, which is shown here in the right-hand side of the screen. The first of the three is the restroom project. The big Tier 1 funding was $100,000, and this was a very important project to the city because they didn't have public restrooms at the fuel dock prior to this project. The restrooms with ADA access were open in May of this year. The second project is the reconstruction of the dinghy dock. This was also a big Tier 1 grant, and the funding was $100,000, and with total project cost just over $138,000. The floating dock was completed some time ago, but was unusable because of the ramp. There was a delay in the construction of the ramp due to the increased costs and weather conditions. Last week, I did receive the final photo listed here on the right-hand side of the screen, that the dock is in position for the ramp, and the final work should be completed on this and ready to be used by the end of this week. So this will improve the accessibility to Avalon's onshore activities, facilities, and also the new restrooms. The third project is the big Tier 2 project to reconstruct the fuel pier. The city applied for a Tier 2 grant in 2008 to partially fund and reconstruct the dock. They were selected for funding in fiscal year 2010 for $1 million. The city's objective for this project was to meet the needs of the 20,000 visiting boaters to Avalon Harbor each year. The project was long and difficult due to compliance, design changes, and during excavation, there was an unknown underground storage tank that was encountered. Thankfully, the city was able to move forward and satisfy all the necessary requirements. This is now, they now have an up and running fuel dock. And we can see that here in the picture. We can see the funds being used and the folks using the fuel office. They are fueling up, and you can see the fuel office right there, which was also utilized with the funds. I will be completing a final report on the three projects that were completed at the City of Avalon, and I hope to do a site visit, and we'll complete the final report and submit that to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife by the end of September. Here is a list of our current big projects. The first one is the city of Newport Beach, which is located in Orange County. The federal award is just over $75,000 and will help fund a new public dock in Lower Newport Harbor, which will provide boaters great access to Lido Marina Village, which has shoppings, restaurants, and special events. Number two is the Port of San Luis, located in San Luis Obispo County, and the federal award is $35,000 and is funding two solar-powered channel markers to assist transient boaters to safely enter the Port of San Luis. The port has received the markers, and they were deployed into the water on July 31st of this year. Moving on to our big Tier 2 projects, the first one listed is the Treasure Island, located in San Francisco County, and the federal award is almost $2 million, and it is to construct a large transient dock to provide 75 new spaces. The second is the one we just received the announcement that California has been awarded $1.5 million for the City of Los Angeles Harbor Department to reconstruct San Pedro Public Market docks. And we were thrilled to receive this announcement, and I'll be providing some additional information on this project in a couple of slides later. City of Rio Vista, located in Solano County, the federal award is $225,000 and will fund a floating dock. I'm happy to announce that after many delays on this project, that they're just now beginning their construction phase, and they hope to have it completed by spring of next year. So as I mentioned in just the last slide, the City of Los Angeles Harbor Department has been awarded $1.5 million to reconstruct the San Pedro Public Market Courtesy Docks, which are shown here. And I did hear that the commission also voted by this area during the last commission meeting. The project is located along the San Pedro LA waterfront between berths 79 and 84. The funds awarded will be used to demolish and remove existing docks and construct six new 100-foot floating docks, which will connect to ADA-compliant gangways. The improvement will provide visitor dock space for up to 12 100-foot guest vessels. The next picture shows the docks, how they currently are and are unusable. Shown here is the location and the proposed docks that will be a part of a much larger project called the Port of Los Angeles Waterfront Development Project. This area was formerly known as Port Socal Marina, which was built in the 1960s and has exceeded its useful life. One of the objectives of the new dock system is to improve the waterfront access to recreational boaters, which will include berthing for larger visiting vessels. The anticipated goal is for the marina enhancement to promote visitation to the San Pedro Public Market, LA Waterfront, and San Pedro area, to also facilitate recreational visits from non-locals, sport fishing, and harbor tours. The Harbor Department estimates 3,000 to 5,000 vessels utilizing the new docks over a span of 1 year. I'm looking forward to managing this new project and learning about it. I wasn't here at the preliminary and the application stages, so it certainly, to me, sounds like a worthwhile project. And as I've shown in my presentation today, Division of Boating and Waterways certainly manages very valuable big projects to the state. And I'd like to ask now if you have any questions regarding the big programs or any of the projects. Thank you.
Quick question relative to there are two instances where it looks like big grants have been used to fund fuel docks. Is that correct? That big grants are available to then fund fuel docks. So that may be an answer to some of our friends here in Noyo Harbor to apply for those big grants for your looking at what you might do with that fuel dock area.
And we did speak about that yesterday. So
oh, good. Okay. You're ahead. Anything, Commissioner Metz?
Yes, I want to commend Ms. Fernandez for your excellent presentation. I was not aware of the dimensions of this program. This is big money. And if you can get the transient segment done, you know, that does reduce any obligation of the division or the local harbor or governmental entity to outlay funds for that. My question is this. The origin of the funds, the flow of funds from the federal government is through the Division of Fish and Game. To what extent of fisherpersons' utilization of those visiting docks, is that a factor at all? I mean, I can see 100-foot slips. I can see fishing vessels, transient fishing vessels, commercial, getting in there. But I just wonder to what extent. I hope there is no particular tie or sub rosa or explicit criteria regarding that.
Your assumption is correct. Karen Dale, chief of the program. There is no direct tie between this funding. While the funding comes from the sale of fishing equipment, but it's also other boating recreational equipment, such as life jackets and whatnot, this particular funding is tied directly to the recreational rather than the fishing portion of boating.
Okay, very good. And I had a last question, but I forgot. Let me bring it up then.
Commissioner Harris.
I just have one. Thanks for the presentation. So potentially, how much money is available per year for the Tier 1 and Tier 2?
Well, for California, is that what you're asking, is up to $200,000. And then for California, it's also $1.5 million. But it is a national competition?
No. But you mentioned that I think there were 6 applications submitted August 1st.
Yes.
And assuming they're all good, would you be able to fund them all? How much money do you have available?
Well, it's given by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and I'm not sure if I'm answering it right, but we could receive up to $200,000 from them to fund any of those Tier 1. So if one of them came in at $200,000, we may only be able to serve one.
Yeah, you're not answering
my
question.
I'm sorry.
How many
Karen.
Millions are available?
So for
California, we have the $200,000 big one, Tier 1, and the $1.5 million Tier 2, so a total of $1.7 million for California.
Per year?
Per year.
Okay.
And that's if the $1.5 million is awarded to a California project.
Okay, wow.
But Tier 1 is a national competition.
Tier 1 is the California competition.
Tier 2
is the national competition, yes, sir.
Thanks. Any other questions? Deputy Director.
Yes, Sandler. I think you noticed on that chart that we've done very well in the national competition. But theoretically, we could get zero. But as it happens, we have very good projects and have done very well.
I now remember, Mr. Chairman, my question.
Commissioner Metz.
Who does the engineering on these projects?
There are various private engineering companies that are contracted by the local entities, whether they're a private marina owner or whether they're a public entity.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to the life jacket awareness program. Ms. Peterson.
I think we're off. It's actually the boating accident program right now.
Okay.
Yes.
We rearranged that because our programs are data driven, and where we're talking about safety, we do look at where the accidents happen and adjust our programs as needed. And so we thought it made more sense to start with the accidents because it drives the future.
Exactly. Good morning, Chairman Short, Commissioners, Deputy Director Sadler, and Councillor Tobias. My name is Johanna Naughton. I work in the Boating Accident Unit. I also work in the Aquatic Grants Program, so I'm going to talk about both programs today. Okay, first I want to talk about the Boating Accident Program. It's a federally mandated program. It's a requirement of our federal grant also. We're tasked with collecting boating accidents in the state of California and reporting to the U.S. Coast Guard. We also use our boating accident, as Deputy Director Sadler said, for our outreach and media campaigns to find out where we should put our resources. So I'm going to first talk about I'm first going to talk about our boating accident statistics from 2016. In 2016, we had 588 boating accidents.
266 injuries and 50 fatalities. This was up slightly from 2015. In 2015, we just had a slightly less, so we were up a little bit from 2015. Of all of our fatalities, those who drowned, 83% were not wearing a life jacket. Of the fatalities, we determined in this year, in 2016, that 40% of our fatalities involved alcohol. That was when testing was conducted, so that's basically when we received the toxicology report from the coroner's report. Paddlecraft, we're continuing to see that it's increasing in popularity. We've noticed a continual growth in our paddlecraft fatalities, and that's consistent with how popular it's becoming. And fishing fatalities were 18% of our fatalities. And so far, we've actually had, this slide says 40% of fatalities so far in 2017. Actually, we just found out the other day that we had another one, so it's 41 fatalities so far in 2017. That's up from 35 this time in 2016. In this slide, we're talking about, this is a slide we're just talking about non-motorized. It includes all motorized or non-motorized, and that includes paddlecraft and sail only and other non-motorized boats. As you can see, we're continuing to see a continual growth in these boating accident fatalities. And because these vessels are not registered, this is one way that we kind of can tell that there is an increase in the popularity. Now let's look at some of another program. Okay, this is the Aquatic Grants Program. Okay, our Aquatic Center Grants Programs offers grants to various organizations that offer on-the-water training. Currently, there are 44 aquatic centers. Over 60,000 beginning intermediate boaters are directly served with on-the-water training at these aquatic centers, which include 19 colleges and universities, 8 cities and counties, and 17 nonprofits. I'm gonna read to you, just because this is a really important story that a mother sent to the Humboldt Bay Aquatic Center. That's a couple hours north of here. She wrote a letter to them, and I'm going to read this. So, I am writing this letter to give your aquatic camps a big thumbs up. My family and I were enjoying a camping trip at Lake Siskiyou this past week. We had 3 stand-up paddle boards with us. Suddenly, someone asked us if they could use one of our boards to help a distressed family that had tipped over in a canoe in the middle of the lake. We could see the family was struggling to climb back into the canoe, and it was filling with water, and they were sinking. My son, Kelvin, knew what to do. He instructed the others to turn the canoe upside down. He then said for someone to stand on one end of the canoe to force the water out of the other end. Kelvin was able to turn the empty canoe back over and assist the family with climbing back in. When they came safely back to shore, Kelvin said that he learned that technique at one of the several aquatic camps he's attended through your program. I'm very proud of my son, his knowledge, and his handling of the situation. Thank you so much for your organization. So I think that says a lot about our aquatic centers. Okay, so these are some of the types of grants that we give out. We give out equipment grants. So we give we give funding for boats, life jackets, sails, different types of equipment, IED stuff. Also, we do scholarships that provide scholarships for like boys and girls groups, instructor training, and also National Safe Boating Week. We give $2,000 to people that will do a National Safe Boating Week event. Our 2017-18 budget is $1.3 million. 60,000 students are offered with on-the-water training. There are over 5,000 courses that are offered. And of the 20 aquatic centers that hosted a National Safe Boating Week event, we estimate there were approximately 90,000 contacts at those events. Our Aquatic Center Grants program offers programs for youths. This includes field trips, summer camps, and week-long STEM program. In Oakland, there are over 1,200 fifth graders that take the Sailing into Science class as part of their curriculum. Adults get classes for general public, college students, and new boat owners, and seniors. We also offer quite a few classes for special populations like the underserved and disabled. We estimate that 34% of the people served at our aquatic center are from underserved populations. The new program changes that we have are we are going to begin funding direct costs for transportation. We found that one of the biggest challenges that aquatic centers had were getting the groups to their aquatic center. So we're going to help with the funding of transportation to get these groups to their aquatic centers. Also, we're going to provide more flexibility in the way we fund staff costs. Nonprofits will now include tax information when they apply. And we have improved copyright releases to make sure we properly are using photos and materials that we receive from the aquatic centers. And we will continue to use the online grant system, OLGA, for applications and our annual reporting. Okay, are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, and thank you for your report. Yeah. We've built some very nice facilities over the years, and do we have any programs to monitor what kind of programs and so on are going on at these facilities? In other words, to give you an example, I hear of wonderful things going on in Mission Bay, for example, mm-hmm. from I think his name was Brandenburg that
yeah,
initially
Glenn Brandenburg
right
yeah.
has done fantastic things mm-hmm. with that facility. I happened to visit the facility, and I know we spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 or $6 million helping build that facility. I visited that facility about a week ago and was surprised to see that no programs were going on at the time when I visited it. There was actually not even a car in the parking lot. And, you know, this is a wonderful facility, but seeing that absolutely vacant was kind of a surprise to me. And along with that was the entire dock, which is an elaborate dock that goes out and makes an L shape. That entire dock was cordoned off with plastic railing all the way around to try and combat, it looked like, try and combat some of the, and let me bring it up so I'm accurate, some apparent significant problems with sea lions. And there was a sign there that read, "Do not approach sea lions." The sea lions were all on the dock. And do not approach sea lions. Sea lions can bite. Seals can be aggressive and can attack. Harassing sea lions is against the law. And so it looked like a real deterrent to running their program. And so two things concerned me. One, I saw a program going on in the harbor, but it wasn't using our facility. I mean, there were kids sailing out there, but they were not using that facility. So do we have programs to take someone like Glenn Brandenburg's program in Mission Bay and share it with the world?
I'm Denise Peterson. I'm the manager of the Boating Safety and Education Program. It's a little bit out of Johanna's program area. So are you talking about Mission Bay Aquatic Center?
Yeah.
And you were there?
I mean, that's the one that I've always heard held up as a fantastic example of what aquatic centers can do.
Yes, it is. And we do have ongoing monitoring and compliance checks with all of our aquatic centers, including them. You must have caught them on a very odd day.
No, the one that I visited was the Channel Islands.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, as with Mission Bay, we do the ongoing compliance checks with all of our 44 aquatic centers. We engage them twice annually at our aquatic center directors meetings to provide program updates. We allow them the opportunity to talk with our program staff. Lynn, our deputy director, Deputy Director Sadler, often comes to those events so that we engage with them if there are any issues ongoing. We work during National Safe Boating Week with our outreach for the aquatic centers so that they can have out activities during the week in the community. That's volunteer on their part. If Channel Islands, you think that specifically they may need some more outreach in that area, we can always reach out to them and make sure that they are using the facility to the best of, you know, of the funds that we give them. Do you have anything else to add about Channel Islands specifically? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Commissioner Pettibon.
Just a quick question regarding the accident statistics.
Yes.
That chart that had the kind of showed an ongoing increase in the mm-hmm. non-motorized
yeah.
accidents. Do you know what those are from? Is that drownings or are there crashes with motorized or what are the?
It's mostly drownings, I would say. A small portion, you see motorized vessels crashing into non-motorized, but most of it's people capsizing, not wearing their life jacket. So unfortunately, even when people are on rapids, sometimes when they're wearing their life jacket, they get caught in debris and sometimes drown. So I think that's mostly.
One of our difficulties and that one of the things that we hope that the boating needs assessment and additional surveys can help us figure out is that 32% of our accidents, fatalities are non-motorized. But what percent of all boating is non-motorized? So there's a guess, and it is just a guess, that non-motorized might be as much as 80% of all boating. Well, if it is, then 32% is actually mm-hmm. a pretty good thing. Apples to oranges here at the moment until we can get a better handle on how many non-motorized boaters there are. So we are making best estimates using information from the American Canoe Association, marine manufacturers, any place we can find information, we're taking it, we're extrapolating. But as you know, you can end up double counting that way or... And let's face it, they're guessing too, so we're making guesses on guesses. So I don't want to put too much weight on the specific percentages because all this can show is that of the fatalities and accidents, 32% of them are non-motorized. But what that means for the big picture, we don't have enough information to make that statistically significant.
Just maybe as a future for looking further into the accidents, I would be interested just because there might be opportunities in the now that the new boating educational course. My personal experience with sailboats and motorized is oftentimes motorized operators, if they're not sailors, they don't understand sailboats can't go into the wind, the things mm-hmm. that sailboats are facing when they're trying to get out of the way. If they're in a hull and there's no wind, they can't move, or all of a sudden they get a puff wind and they're all of a sudden changing course dramatically for what the motorized operator sees. And so there might be opportunities to avoid at least some of the fatalities,
yeah.
Which might be an area of future research.
Thank you.
Commissioner Harris.
Thank you for your reports. I have a safety question for you. I mostly paddle in the San Francisco mm-hmm. Bay Area, and I see very few stand-up paddlers wearing a life vest, a life belt, anything like that. And when I see them, especially in my home port of Redwood City, I say something. Mm-hmm. What can we all do?
Well, they are...
People don't get it. They think that the board is a flotation device.
They're legally required to at least carry a life jacket.
Well, they don't.
I'm not sure. Yeah. We often... I know with our media campaign, we often, you know, tell them to wear life jackets, and a lot of our pictures have stand-up paddleboarders wearing stand-up life jackets.
I always tell people it gives you a pocket to put your cell phone and your keys in.
Yeah. Well, and the belt packs, I think, are really nice, especially if you're wearing them properly. I just want to tell people, make sure you wear them properly and know how they work, because we have had fatalities with people not using them properly. So make sure you wear it. If you wear your life jacket, wonderful, but make sure you wear it properly.
Okay. Great. And then I have questions about aquatic centers. We were able to tour Treasure Island last year. I don't remember which meeting it was, but we saw the aquatic center there, and I really got excited about aquatic centers. So I've got a couple of questions about them. So there are 44 statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, how many more might there be?
Well, we're limited by funds.
But are they all applying every year, the core that
not
you have?
Most of them apply. It's a two-year cycle, and so most aquatic centers will apply. There is occasionally times where some aquatic centers will have enough money and they won't need any, but for the most part, people will apply for...
Well, I'm just curious, you know, what if you had five more come on board? You know, maybe the Coast Guard would provide more money to support them, because these boaters are our future.
Yes,
they're the
exactly.
ones who are going to be out there, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years when we're all gone. You know?
Exactly.
So, okay. So another question. I think that's great that, you know, you have these biannual meetings with the Aquatic Center. Can the public go to those meetings?
Yes, and we advertise it on our website. You should be able to go to our website right now and find out when our next Aquatic Center Directors meeting. Our next meeting will be in San Diego, October 17th, I believe, 17th and 18th.
Do you ever have them in Northern California?
Yes, we have. In the spring, we have them in the Northern California. In the fall, they're in Southern California.
Because I'd be interested in hearing about
that.
Yeah,
I think our next Northern one will be at Cal Maritime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Commissioner Metz.
Yes, to what extent do your statistics that you gather relate to the subject of underserved populations? Can we tell from your statistic, can you do an analysis indicating how many underserved groups, which aquatic centers are doing that, what groups are being served who are underserved? It's been a concern, I know, of Commissioner Peralta, myself, about the extent of service to that group by one of the aquatic centers in our area, the Silver Strand area. So my question is, what do we ask regarding that, and what do we require as far as periodic reporting?
We ask when a person applies. We do ask them about the populations that they serve and how much of their population is underserved. We also have an annual report that contractors or grantees are required to submit to us, and there are different ways of determining what's underserved. Some people go by income, because income in San Diego versus Butte County is going to be totally different on what's an underserved. A lot of times they use like the free lunch program to determine if that's, so every aquatic center uses a different decision on how they decide who's underserved.
To what extent does the grant criteria include any incentives for either helping the underserved or doing other things? Now, I'm really asking, maybe you can provide later, what are the criteria for awarding a grant?
Well, I mean,
past performance, future plans.
We look to make sure that we don't want to just only serve these larger aquatic centers that are doing well. So we're trying to make sure that we have some in the underserved areas, and so we're trying to, you know, put some all over California, we're hoping to get. So if, you know, in San Diego, I know we have a couple areas that we serve, and so I don't know if we're going to be, you know, adding any more in that area, but we may actually, you know, that's all.
Also,
During Johanna's presentation, she talked about we are now going to include transportation as an allowable expense, and that's one of the reasons, because transportation is one of the biggest barriers for some underserved areas to participate in the grants, the classes at the aquatic centers. So that will help remedy that in some areas. Also, it should be noted that although we have 44 aquatic center grants that go out, not all of them are, I'm sure a lot of you know this, not all of them are big BISCs, the boating instruction safety centers that DBW has developed. In fact, the large majority of them are not. They're just small community-based organizations, nonprofits that host classes. So, I would say, I don't know about the majority of them, but a large amount of the people that they serve are underserved communities.
Last question. In our community, the city of Coronado has established a boating center, which is about 3.5 miles from the Silver Strand Aquatic Center. And I'm wondering, to what extent do you require the aquatic centers to report degrees of cooperation or complementarity in terms of hours of service, types of instruction offered? And I also would include the uniqueness of the aquatic center on the Silver Strand. You have a magnificent Silver Strand State Park. So I'm wondering, to what extent do the programs and services of the aquatic center take into account very near related services or opportunities for synergism with a prominent state park, which is shore-based?
Been reviewing the grant application and the criteria, and that's one of the things that we ask in the application process is what other nearby facilities are there and what are they serving or what are they doing, because we don't want to be duplicative in what we're doing, or we want to make sure that we are covering the needs of the community. So that is one of the questions we ask on the application.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate the report.
I'd want to add one thing.
Also, you were emphasize that we do need to move along.
The report is posted, so you'll be able to see what we're and what communities we're serving, et cetera.
All right.
Okay. Hello, I'm Denise Peterson again. I'm the Boating Safety and Education Manager. I oversee the boating accident program, the aquatic center program, the media campaign, and all of our outreach and education activities and programs. So first thing I'm going to talk about here is the boating safety course. So DBW has for many years developed and provided the California Boating, A Course for Safe Boating, which is our home study course. I don't know if you all have seen it, but it's a very nice publication. It's our behind the ABCs of boating. It's the second most requested publication, and that may change with the California Boater Card program coming up, because the course is approved for boater card eligibility. So currently, if you take the home study course, it meets the requirements of the California Boater Card. You can take it now, and even though the Boater Card program starts January 1 of 2018, you can be grandfathered in. And that grandfathering will go back to January 1st of 2015. So anytime from January 2015 until the implementation of the program, if you've taken a NASBLA, which is the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators, and a California-approved course, you will be eligible for to take the card without redoing your education. You just have to pay for the card. So you've already met the education requirement. So currently, the home study course is free to the public. However, DBW is conducting a cost analysis to see, you know, what's the most efficient way of putting this publication out. For years, I think shortly after the implementation of this course, there was a $2 fee for the course, and over the years, the course has gotten bigger and nicer. It's a very nice publication. It's meant to be saved and used as a resource and a reference material. But with the increase in popularity and with the voter card coming up, we have seen an increase in demand for it as well. So we're looking to see if we can could or should charge a small fee for it or charge the entire cost of what it costs to develop it. So currently, from start to finish, including staff cost, design, printing, and shipping, each book costs approximately $16.50. So DBW has subsidized that cost for years. So we're just looking at that to see if that's an efficient use of voter dollars and if we should maybe charge a small fee for it. So also, one of the new things that is coming with the voter course is that right now the home study course, when you take it, it's designed to be an 8-hour at-home course, and it comes with a very technologically advanced Scantron, and you use your number two pencil like back in the day, and you take the course that way, and then you submit the Scantron through the mail, and we will score it in-house and then send you a certificate if you've passed. So what we're doing now is working with our IT shop, who is working on the voter card database, to put at least the answer portion, the questions, and the exam online. So you will still use the book as reference, and we also have it online in a PDF version if you don't have a hard copy. But then you can have the ability to take the exam online and submit it directly online, which will tie to the California voter card database, so that will feed them directly and your eligibility will automatically be in the database. So then once you go to pay for the card, it will see that you've already met the education requirement. So that's kind of exciting. We're hoping to have that done by year's end, so that when people start or when they need to have the card, they can take that online as well. So those are some things coming up that we're excited about. So some of our statistics with the home study course from last year. As I said, it's really grown in popularity, I think, because right now it's free. And as far as I know, online versions of a home study course, there is one free online course. So there's everything else you pretty much have to pay a fee for. So last year, in 2016, we distributed over 16,000 courses. And those were through just general requests that we get people calling in. We work with the aquatic centers, and they order the publications. Also, the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary and the U.S. Power Squadrons partners, and they use these materials oftentimes in their in-classroom boating education courses, and so they request them as well. So over 16,000 were distributed last year. We received over 1,800 exams to score and issue certificates. About 94% of people who take the exam pass it. And it also meets court-ordered requirements. So if currently, before the law was, the California voter law came into play, if you were charged with a moving violation on the water, almost always you were required to take a boating safety course. And so this would meet those requirements as well. So do you have any questions on this program before I move forward? If you'd like a copy of it, we can have them sent to you. And I encourage you all to get a boating safety card. You have one? Oh, you'd like a copy? Okay. So, yes, I encourage you all to get a boating safety card. You can take the exam now. It's free. And that way you can easily get your boater safety card. Okay. So moving on to education and outreach efforts. Last fiscal year, 2016 through 2017, we had an overall budget of $550,000. And then that includes our outreach events and also life jackets that we purchase for recreational boaters. So in 2016-17, we had... Oh, let me go back a slide, sorry. Let me talk a little bit about this. So pictured here is our interactive trailer that is provided through added value of our media campaign. So we do radio buys for the media campaign, and as added value, they give us safety team, and this year and last year included the interactive trailer. So the trailer includes life jacket education and distribution. People learn about the different types of life jackets and how to use them for different boating activities, so they're not using like a paddle vest, you know, on a sailboat or vice versa. So it includes a hydration station, so when we're out at in the summertime when it's boating season and we're at events and we're in, you know, a really hot area, you can go in and get cooled off. It's air conditioned and you can fill up your water bottle. And that really draws people in. It shows ongoing boating safety videos, the ones that we've published in the past, and just other ongoing safety videos so people can watch them. And we distribute publications, which includes the home study course, our ABCs of boating, our life jacket pamphlet, and other publications that the division produces. And it also has a charging station for mobile devices. So if you're out at the fair or an event and your phone's dying, you can stop by and plug in. So it's a well-branded, as you can see, trailer. It really draws people in. We were just out at the state fair recently, and we had a good turnout. Let's talk about. Okay. I will continue. So we distribute life jackets in three different ways. Last year, our budget was $300,000 for life jackets. The first is at loan stations. So we work with communities throughout the state, like local cities, fire departments, search and rescues, and a lot of those, and also in state parks, a lot of them have existing loaner stations, so like at the river's edge, you can borrow a life jacket for the day and then return it at the end of the day. So we've worked with over 80 life jacket loan stations throughout the state. Each year we start new loan stations. We're developing a pilot program within state parks to work within the state park, the recreational areas, to develop the loaner stations where we don't have them currently. And so we work with the communities to provide the initial loan station, the jackets, and then we replenish them as they need. So that's one of the ways that we distribute life jackets. The second is our life jacket trade-ins. So every year, the Saturday, which is the first Saturday of National Safe Boating Week, we have a statewide, last year it was more than 40 events, where we do life jacket trade-ins, where people can come in and bring their old, non-fitting, or unserviceable life jackets, and we'll give them a new one. So this year, Melissa Miranda, who is the analyst with this program, she was happy that at some of the events, there were people who brought back jackets from last year's trade-ins that would no longer fit their kids, but they were still in great shape, and they brought them in. So if we, during the trade-ins, if the jackets are still usable, we will use those and give those to loaner stations throughout the state. So it's kind of a recycling thing as well. So, and then also, lastly, the third place that we give out jackets is just at various outreach events. So I think next weekend we will be, or maybe it's this weekend, we'll be up at the Tahoe Nalu, which is a paddle event. And we will provide a lot of paddle jackets for people at those events, and we'll have our outreach tent and educational materials. So throughout the state, we've done, I don't know how many events we've done this year that we continue to do to promote safe boating, life jacket wear. I know, Commissioner Harris, you had a question about the paddle SUPs, and at those events, we really, especially the paddle events, we really talk to people about, we don't just hand a person a life jacket, we go through a whole educational spiel to make sure that, one, they know that it's the proper life jacket for the activity, and that they're using them properly. So we spent $250,000 this year in outreach events. Pictured here is our fearless leader, Deputy Director Sadler, with our new mascot this year, Riva, the river otter, or the otter. And so this is right outside our office there in Sacramento. And this was Wear Your Life Jacket to Work Day. And so we're out there taking pictures. she's the new mascot. I don't know if you recall Splasher, who was retired, and now Reva is new for the AquaSmart program. So with the AquaSmart program, we are state-required to provide school-age boating and water safety education to the K through 12 school-age children. So currently, it's undergoing a curriculum update. The activity book is in the final review, so we've not only are updating the curriculum, but we're updating the logo, the mascot, all of that. So all of our materials are going to reflect Reva and our new logo. And most of the curriculum, or all of the curriculum, will be finished by the end of this year. And one of the tie-ins with our AquaSmart program is our AquaSmart puppet show, which goes to schools throughout the state and provides a puppet show that ties in the boating and water safety. This year we had 180 school assemblies where we reach kids throughout the state. Our outreach also includes minor league baseball teams. This year we've expanded to two other teams. We initially started with the Sacramento River Cats because it was local, and from there we built on to the Modesto Nuts and the Lake Elsinore Storm. And we work with those partners, and we do in-game videos and quizzes. You can see from the picture that's at the Sacramento River Cats, and we do in-game messaging, including videos and in-game trivia, and people have an opportunity to win a life jacket. And then this year we had a big boating day and boating night with the Sacramento River Cats, where we did a life jacket trade-in that was very successful. So additional outreach we do, we use our accident statistics to kind of drive where we target our outreach. We have gone to boat shows, sportsman shows, the state fair, safety fairs, marine events, and on-the-water tournaments. And we also, Commissioner Short, we also work with our aquatic centers, and when they have local events, we work with them as well. So I encourage you, if any of you hear of an event and you don't know if we're involved or we should be involved, please contact us and let us know. Yes.
Speaking of, do you plan to be at Bay Day on Saturday, October 7th?
It doesn't sound familiar to me, so I don't think
so. Okay, well, it's only the second year, but, you know, the concept is to have events all around San Francisco Bay. And I know for this year, I think Richmond, San Francisco, and Redwood City will have, you know, tabling opportunities and lots of boating demos and things like that. I know REI is very involved. And the Bay Area Water Trail.
What do you know the dates?
October 7th.
October 7th. Okay.
Yeah.
I will get with you after.
Yeah, because I'll probably be tabling there anyhow. So
okay.
I'd love to see you there.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So impact and results from our education and outreach efforts. So last year we gave out 8,200 life jackets. We touched kids and adults at 315 different schools and 30-plus events. Just for numbers-wise, with the money we spent on life jackets, we spent $300,000 in life jackets and distributed over about 8,200 life jackets. The math breaks down to about $37.50 per life jacket, which is a pretty good cost. I'm sure you are all familiar with buying life jackets, and they're not inexpensive. But because we buy such a big volume of them, we do get a good price, and they're good quality. This year, we gave out U.S. Coast Guard approved, of course, neoprene-type jackets. So we were getting a lot of good feedback about the quality of the jackets. And for $37.50, it's a good deal. So, any questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
My name is Jolene King, and I manage the Boating Safety Outreach Multimedia Campaign. Good morning, Commissioner Short, Commissioners, Deputy Director Sadler, Councillor Tobias, and members of the public. We're going to wrap this up fairly quickly. Since 1999, California boaters have responded very positively to DBW's annual Boating Safety and Awareness and now Environmental Awareness multimedia campaigns. Boating accidents have decreased or leveled off since that time. Boaters have supported boating safety education and boaters have adopted safe behaviors such as fewer people boating under the influence and more wearing life jackets. In 2017, we began year two of this campaign using the familiar 2016 creative in digital, social, broadcast, and print media to extend awareness obtained during the first year of the new boating safety messages. How many of you have seen this billboard anywhere in the state? Very good. I can go sit down now. This billboard not only was seen all over the state, but it was also awarded first place in the International Boating and Water Safety Summit meeting earlier this year amidst all of the contenders for outdoor safety advertising. The 2016 message was Love California, Boat California, Save California theme. We distilled it. We did a survey, and we distilled it into a Save the Ones You Love. We used the same artwork, but we changed the tagline for better awareness because we do a survey each year, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Our 16-week safety campaign runs from Memorial Day to Labor Day, the height of the boating season. It continues to resonate with boaters not only for life jacket wear, but we've blended smaller environmental campaigns as we have funds in with the same type of creative so that the recognition will be there and we don't have to build a new audience. We include proper sewage disposal and oily waste disposal in our environmental messaging. New in one of the things we had included for the past 5 years was a save your water message and drought messaging. New for 2017, it started to rain. We're going to go to our next. Oops. A left click. And a video should start here. There they go. Is it not? Oh, okay. All right. You can see it on our website. What we did is we pivoted very quickly, and you can just see by the image here, we went from no water to cold and fast water, and we were alerted early on in the season of some snow. As the snow melt started and as the rain started, we were getting rafting and paddlecraft injuries, fatalities, especially down on the Kern. And so what we did was, it wasn't in our original media buy because it hadn't heretofore had that many accidents. And so with digital, we're able to really turn on a dime. And what we did is we managed to have some of our B-roll footage from an excellent whitewater DVD that we did the previous year. And we created a message of watch out for fast, cold water. Don't go beyond your limits, know about cold water shock, and always wear your life jacket. And it was very well received. And we had it up within days of receiving information about multiple accidents on the Kern. And so we're very proud of that fact. One of the other things that we were able to add this year in 2017 were additional bumper stickers. And I know I placed a bumper sticker that I thought matched your boating abilities here on your dais today. We added two new ones for law enforcement to hand out during Operation Dry Water. And it was the iBoat Buzz Free and No Booze on Board. And law enforcement were able to distribute this the week before the 4th of July heavy boating weekend to award people who were boating sober and to spread the message of no alcohol when boating. Our campaign message mix is not only boating safety, although that is the main message based on the federal funding that we have. But it encompasses clean and green, clean vessel pump outs. The California boater card is new. As of last year, we started messaging for that. And life, and of course, life jacket outreach. And so how our campaign message mix looks, boating safety and life jacket outreach are funded through the federal funds that we receive. And the clean and green quiz, clean vessel pump outs, and California boater card all come from harbors and watercraft funding. They all follow under this umbrella campaign. So we get economies of scale with media buys and also design costs because we've been able to work it together under one campaign contract. You'll see the boating clean and green quiz artwork. It mirrors and matches the boating safety artwork. How we determine our media buys, as you were informed just a few minutes ago, we look at the boating accident data. And that determines where the buy takes place. For instance, you're not going to see, for members of the public here up in Fort Bragg, you're not included in this particular media buy because you've been very safe boaters. And we can't cover all the state with all of the media. We do cover all of the state with digital and social media, and I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But for all of you who know that California is a very expensive media market, and so we have to budget our dollars, and we look at the boating accident target areas. And this is something that Boating and Waterways developed. We've told other states about this, and they follow our lead on this, where we look at accident data and we merge it with media markets. And so we look and see how we're going to spend the funds based on media market and high accident areas. And so, for example, the media buy this year, based on the funds that we had, and the accident data and where it was happening. These are the budgets for the 2017 media campaign for the buy alone. And so you can see those media markets and where they went. You can see the elephant in the room. Los Angeles has the most expensive media market. It's also a high accident boating area. So that's where those media buy dollars went. New in 2017, and I hope you all have your mobile phones here, and I hope you all have downloaded the BoatCA app. It's a free app. It's available for Apple and Android, and we have about 2,000 downloads so far. It came out and at the end of May, beginning of June. It's a fabulous little app that includes all of the boat launch facilities. Yesterday when we were on our tour, I pulled up the Fort Bragg, the Noyo Harbor, and all of the data was there, and it follows you. It placed me right there, and I could see I was right at the boat launch facility. I can click on there and see what's available at that boat launch facility. So we've been promoting that on social media. We just had a Facebook post about it this week and got a number of hits on that. And so it also has environmental information, boating law, navigation information on it. So it's a very useful app, and we're looking at possibly including some aquatic invasive species information on that in the future as well. But I hope you all have downloaded Boat California app. One other thing, float plans, very important in safety. And we're pushing the ease of filing a float plan here. On here, you can click on float plan. An email automatically pops up with merged with your email, where you can just fill in what kind of boat you have, when you've gone out, when you're coming back, and you send it to a trusted friend so they can report that to law enforcement or emergency services if you don't come back. So that is another thing on the Boat California app. The impact and results for our campaign this year. This is actually the 2016 message recall. We do a survey. We survey over 500 registered boaters and over 250 paddlecraft owners. It's done through a research firm. And we've been doing waves of it for the past 15, 16 years. And so we compare every year. We see how we're going. It changes when we change a media campaign theme. Sometimes we'll see, well, navigation. We have to help voters learn about navigation, or we have to help voters learn about the importance of life jackets. So the campaigns change from time to time. We're in year two of this particular life jacket campaign, and our first year we had just over 70% recall of the message, and also that it affected voters' behaviors. It said it positively affected them. We're getting the survey ready to go. It's going to be deployed in September next month. For our 2017 campaign to assess the value and the results and what went well and what needed help. So we're hoping for 75% at least for our second year of this campaign. And social media growth, I'm so excited today. I turned on my Facebook, because you're all following Facebook, Vote California. And if you are, you are number 100,000. We just hit that yesterday, the 100,000th follower of Vote California. And in fact, within 24 hours, we'd already gone up to 101,000. I just checked before the meeting. So you're in good company if you're following us on Vote CA on our Facebook. And that was one of our goals this year, was to hit 100,000, and we have met that goal before the end of the voting season. I want to thank you, and I encourage you to help us spread our voting safety message through our social media and our outreach. Do you have any questions?
Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to our confirmation of our future meetings, which are listed here. I don't think we need to cover them, do we? Okay. Moving on to our governments, the concept of commissioner work groups is a concept that Deputy Director Sadler and I have been talking about, with the idea that advancing our what happens on our day before our meeting, doing some workshops to bring the commission and others up to date on what's going on within voting. And then we have also the committees that we're attempting to, that we introduced last at our last meeting, and we're attempting to flesh out. Council and I spent a considerable amount of time day before yesterday sorting out how exactly to do that, to make it as easy as possible for us to get our constituents to help us with what we do at Boating and Waterways and what the commission does. And I had a lengthy conversation yesterday with Director Mongat, and she and I have agreed to have a further conversation tomorrow, hoping that I get my frequent Caltrans miles in today and am able to get there to the meeting and meet with her to discuss how those committees might function, and we might further her desires to see what goes on with Boating and Waterways. And then last suggested agenda items for the next meeting, I'll take my own turn first and tell you that Deputy Director Sadler and I have had a discussion this morning briefly about reworking the agenda and trying to make the agenda, our agenda, more constituent-based. It's constituent-building-based. And what I mean by that is that when I look at, and all of us have a lot of constraints on our calendar, lots of things that we have to do, and when I look at various seminars and things that go on, meetings that occur, whether they be local meetings, boating meetings, business meetings, and so on, I always look at what's going on to determine whether I have the time and need to spend the time to go attend this. And what I'd like to see is us create an agenda where when we go somewhere, our constituents say, gee, I can't miss that. I want to be at that meeting to hear this discussion about what Boating and Waterways is doing relative to this or relative to that. And so I'd like to try and move our agenda to be more constituent-based. The other thing I'd like to have on a future agenda is the discussion of opening our grants to other than agencies. Currently, I think the law says that we can only grant money to an agency that answers to an elected body. In other words, we can only do it to cities, counties, the Forest Service that answers to Congress, and so on. And I know that our sister organization, OHV, grants money to other other than agencies. They grant money to 501c3s, and I'd like to talk about that as a way to also improve and change what Boating and Waterways, how we grant money to, how we might grant money to 501c3s or other organizations, such as what we saw yesterday with Dusty and so on. And with that, I'd open it up to any other items that the commission has that they'd like to see on the agenda as well. Commissioner Metz.
I've already mentioned one, namely the retrospective and current flow of funds from the boaters' portion of the excise fuel tax study. And number two, I'd like to see an item with respect
to the current extent of current activities in the Aquatic Center for serving the underserved. And in view of the fact that we will have before the next meeting a meeting of the directors of those centers, getting their thoughts and staff's thoughts regarding future opportunities, given the fact that we will have some transportation funds. So hopefully there's going to be a great gap between what we're doing now and what we could do with transportation funds.
Commissioner Harris.
I don't know if this is quite an agenda item, but it's a request.
As a commissioner, it would help me to know what Boating and Waterways activities, events, etc., that might be good for us to attend. And I repeatedly get told, oh, go look at the website. You can find out what's going on. Well, that doesn't tell me anything. So, you know, if there's a way to have, you know, sort of a list of things, and those of commissioners around the state might have an opportunity to attend.
Anything further? Thank you. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting.
No, let's keep going.